This is a special day. Somebody in the first hour said it's a red letter day, and I said, no, you have to wait till Matthew for that. But it is a special day. Only 66 times will we get to say we're finished with the book.
How many have we done so far?
Pardon?
You know how many we've done so far?
Less than half. In any event, if you will find Psalms, we'll start there in just a minute. Let me find it too. I want to tell you that I had an interesting experience getting ready for today. I have a set of 5 notebooks that has the notes that I took and used during the first 2 times we went through the Bible. And so I went to find my notes for Psalms. There are 4 pages of notes for Psalms from the last 2 times that I did the thing. That's very possible. Okay. Now, what's fascinating here is that one of those pages looks like this. If you look carefully, it is duplicated top to bottom, so that it will be cut in half. Half a page given to this person, half a page given to that person. Now, there's a specific person out of the Psalms that we're going to look at. Really cool is this page. Because on this page, it has that same list. And when you break out the places where there's 2 things out of 1 chapter, you end up with 44 different things we're going to apparently look at. And next to each one is a name. This isn't going to mean as much to you as it would to folks in the first hour, and it doesn't mean as much to everybody in the first hour as it does to some. Because this list goes back at least 12 years, maybe 15 years. Okay? And I look on the list, and thoughts come back. The first 2 names on this list are Ham Collier and Miriam Collier. And most of you have no idea who that is. Pillars of this church for a very long time. They're deep into retirement. I think they're still alive. But Ham was the one who kept us financially straight. Miriam was one of those wonderful hostess-type people that, thank goodness, we still have. Valerie and Mark McBride, a young couple. Their parents are still in the church. They've moved to another church and did that some time ago. I think you would know Valerie and Mark.
I'm actually building their house for them right now.
Are you?
Getting ready to start.
Tell them I mentioned them this morning, will you?
What was their last name?
McBride. Right. McBride. John McBride is and Sylvia are active in our church now. John and Sabrina McHugh, you may remember them. They're on the list. Tom Jenkins is on the list. He comes in the first hour from time to time, but he's got things going on with his family. He's not able to get here too often. John and Marianne Harris are on here. The first hour is going to have a little party out at Lakewood Manor for the Discovery class members who are over there. Most of them out of the first hour. And John and Marianne are 2 of those. Marianne is living in what I heard another person in our class describe, speaking of her mother, as pleasant confusion. And so we'll have this, but she was not confused at that time. And I look down through here. Some people are gone. We've had their funerals. And others are here. And the memories that come back, and what those memories tell me is, we have a community in our group. That community is divided now because of the 2 time periods. You guys don't know the other hour very well. They don't know you very well. But we still have a community. And in our community, we grieve for each other. We're full of joy for each other. And that's what the Psalms really are. Is the expressions of the community and of individuals within the community as their lives will play out. Sometimes it's good things, sometimes it's not so good things. And what that became was the songbook for the people of Israel. It became the songbook for the people of Israel. The word hymn, H-Y-M-N, the word hymn, captures the idea of a song, but captures it with a sense of at least the awareness of the sacred in it. It's not just a song. It's a song that expresses either a connection with God or a connection to others of God's people. Somebody described it as lyric poetry or religious poetry set to music, meant to be sung or perhaps publicly recited by and from and for Israel and her people. Now, as we get started, I want to ask a question. Are there any psalms that didn't make it into the psalms? Say yes.
Yes.
Songs of praise or songs, expressions like that that are meant to be sung. I want to show you a couple of these. If you turn to Exodus 15, you don't have to go there. I'll tell you what's there, but if you have time to go if you want to. Exodus 15 is called the Song of Moses. It's an entire chapter that's the Song of Moses. Now, thinking about the life of Moses, when do you think it's most likely that he would have reason to sing a song of praise and a song of victory and a song of accomplishment?
After deliverance from Egypt.
And what moment would that deliverance have taken? Which moment? Because that deliverance was processed and took.
After they crossed the Red Sea.
The Red Sea opened up, they crossed in safety, and when it closed down, the Egyptian army was destroyed and the threat was gone. That's when the Song of Moses was set. 40 years of wandering in the wilderness is still ahead of them. But he sang the song of victory because for the first time they were free. But now the question is, what do we do with our freedom? And it took them years to work this out. You okay? There's a second one that's located in Judges chapter 5. And we call it the Song of Deborah. If you go in there and read it, and read the context around it, what you find is it shouldn't have been the Song of Deborah. It should have been the Song of Barak. I think I've got this right.
Yes.
It should have been the Song of Barak. But Barak was king, and he was threatened. His country was threatened. He came to Deborah, who was a prophetess, to seek the Lord's guidance and the Lord's help. And Deborah said, "Go to it. The Lord will help you and protect you." "I'm afraid," he said. "You need to do it." And Deborah said, "Okay, I'll take the leadership and I'll make sure that things happen according to God's plan and I'll do that. But you have to understand, if that happens, the credit goes to me and not to you." And he said, "That's okay." So at the end, what should have been Barak's song was Deborah's song. Very, very interesting. There's a third one that's right on the border between 1 and 2 Samuel. It's in the first chapter of 2 Samuel. Be careful. The first chapter of 2 Samuel. This one I want you to look up. It's the first chapter of 2 Samuel. Now, do you know enough about 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel to have an idea of what this song was?
You
should. Okay. Well, let me remind you a little bit. 1 Samuel mostly is focused on Saul. That means some focus goes on Saul's son Jonathan, and some focus goes on David, because toward the end of Saul's life, it became obvious God was going to displace him and put David in. But that had not happened until after 2 Samuel, until after 1 Samuel ended and 2 Samuel began. And so the end of 1 Samuel is the death of Saul and the death of Jonathan on the battlefield. And in 2 Samuel, first chapter, verse 17, it says, "David sang a lament," yours may say elegy, "for Saul and Jonathan." You see that? And if you look, it goes verse after verse after verse after that. He talks about them. But as long as we're here, I want to show you one more little thing. Read verse 17 in its entirety, and then read verse 18. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 17 should say
David sang this song as a lament or an elegy. I forget exactly how it's worded. You should say something like that. In honor of, in memory of, Saul of John. Right? And then verse 18 in my translation has a parenthesis.
Does yours have a parenthesis?
Yes.
And inside the parenthesis, it says something fascinating.
What does it say inside parentheses?
Written in the scroll.
What does it say?
Written in the book of Jashar.
Yeah, not that part, the other part.
It's the song of the bow.
Written in the book of Jashar.
Yours? Yeah. But what does it say? The song of the bow?
The sons of teach the sons of Judah the song of the bow.
Mine says teach archery to the children of Judah. This song was used to teach archery to the children of Judah.
It says
the
lament of the
bow. Isn't this fascinating? What does yours say?
Yeah. It says, then David composed a funeral song for Saul and Jonathan, and he commanded that it be taught to the people of Judah. It is known as the Song of the Bow, and is recorded in the book of Jeshua.
Okay. That translation, I think, may come a little closer to what's really going on. But I like mine, and I'm telling you about mine.
Mine says, this song was used to teach archery to the children of Judah. Okay? Now, what does that do? That makes me begin to think that you have something like da-ta-da, ta-ta-da, ta-ta-da, wha, da-ta-da, ta-ta-da, ta-ta-da, wha, da-ta-da, ta-ta-da, ta-ta-da, wha, da-ta-da, ta-ta-da, ta-ta-da, fling. Right? I can picture that because there's certain things that you got to do them. You got to do them in order. You got to do them in certain ways, and maybe they're using music for that. But as these other translations began to come up, you begin to see something different. When mine says the children of Judah, that doesn't mean little kids. There's translations out there. You may have one that says descendants. Yours said something close to that.
Mine says the men.
Yours says the men of Judah, and some people in our first hour began to think, well, that means the soldiers. And yours says
sons.
The sons. And when you say sons of so-and-so, you start to think of those John Wayne movies like the sons of Katie Elder. They are not children anymore. Who the heck is going to teach them? So what's this thing saying? This thing is saying, David said, I want every person in the country, especially the ones who might be soldiers, to understand what was good about Saul and Jonathan. And especially for Saul, what went wrong so that it won't go wrong for you. It was used for moral instruction. And I missed that with my translation. I just saw teach archery to the children of Judah, and I went off in another direction.
Well, I want you to know my study Bible agrees with you.
Teach archery.
I have a feeling it may literally say teach archery to the children of Judah, but I think these other translations are picking up the more likely thing.
Thank okay. you of the sermon today. I like the very verse 19. O Israel, your pride and joy lies dead upon the hills.
Yeah.
Thinking of the sermon today.
Yeah. Now there's one more that I know about in the Old Testament. There's one more I know about in the Old Testament. It's buried in just a couple of verses in Numbers 21. And it is a song of praise for a well. It's a song of praise for a well. Can you think of a reason why people might sing a song of praise to God for a well? They might have been dying of thirst. Now, I don't remember the exact circumstances. This is in the time of the Exodus and the wandering in the wilderness, right? Exodus didn't take too long, but the wandering in the wilderness did, and we sort of put it all together. This was in that time frame. And so there was apparently a source of water that they found, and they wrote something in praise of that. Are there any that you know of in the New Testament? Can you think of one?
Mary's Magnificat.
And it turns out in Luke 1 and Luke 2, there's three. Bang, 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 one after another. Mary's song is the first one, and the Latin word Magnificat is often associated with that. It's a somewhat stilted way of saying it, but she said something to the effect, may he be magnified, may I be his servant. And so they picked out that word and called it the Magnificat. Do you remember the other two? Remember the other two?
Well, they sang Stephen's in the prison, didn't Paul and...
Yeah, and I might go pick one of those up someday. Right now, I'm just looking in Luke 1 and Luke 2. There's three of them back to back to back.
The first one is Mary, and they call that the Magnificat. The second one... Yeah, a whole bunch of people thought it was Elizabeth, but it's not. It's dead.
Zechariah.
It's John the Baptist's father. When they found out that Elizabeth is pregnant, it's Zechariah who speaks. And what he speaks is called the Benedictus, or Benedictus. And it's because your blessings have come, and picking up a Latin word for that. The last of these comes from Simeon on the way into the temple. And I have this picture of Simeon hanging out at the temple every day simply because that was the place he wanted to be. And one day the Holy Spirit prompts him and says, "Do you see that couple coming in?" And I don't think he would have said, "See that young couple," because tradition says Joseph was considerably older than Mary. He said, "See that couple coming? Go up and take a good look at that baby." And he realized that a prayer that he had been praying for his whole life, and that God had promised to grant, that he would be allowed to see the Messiah before he died. And when he steps up and sees the Messiah, he begins to sing. And what he sings is, "Lord, let thy servant depart in peace." Nunc dimittis, I think it's called, and speaking up Latin words from that. Okay, so there are places in the Bible that would fit if they had been put into the Psalms. I didn't say Miriam's, but there are others that you might think of. The one in the prison, although I don't think they say what they sang.
I don't think so. I think they
and I'm looking for ones where they actually say that. So there's probably several more. These are a few of them. Okay. Sorry?
Quick aside.
Yeah.
The book of Jasher is?
The book of?
Jasher.
That's one we don't have. We may have fragments of it and not know that we have fragments of it. They speak of things.
In all through the Kings, it says this is recorded in the annals of the king or the books of the kings. And maybe that is or maybe that isn't what we call First and Second Kings. I want to get back, though. Why are they called Psalms?
Pardon?
Why are they called Psalms? It turns out that if you Google Psalterian, use a silent in the front of it, Psalterian, this is what you get.
I look for images of Psalterian. Psalterian was the name of a musical instrument. These are modern adaptations of it. People have built what they think they look like. When I Googled it, it said I had 15 pages of these images. If I wanted, I printed out one page. If you take a look at this, what you see are things that maybe look a little like a zither, or maybe look a little like a guitar without the neck. Right? Some of them have a sound box in this. If you take a look, some of them have a bow, like you might say. These were called Psalterians, or at least that's what modern reconstruction of ancient times is, what they think so. And the Psalms, I'm told, got their name from the musical instrument, and therefore hymns meant to be sung with musical accompaniment sort of fits into that. I don't know how much of that is exactly accurate, which one came first, which one came second, but there it sits. Now, what I want to talk about for a moment is some things to get you oriented to this. Now, if you were here last week, you know that we finished Isaiah. You're supposed to start reading in the Psalms, but that's a lot of stuff to read. So one of the things that I want to do is to begin to tell you, if you start looking through the Psalms and try to impose some order or structure on there, one of the things that you'll end up doing is saying, well, these Psalms are all kind of alike, and they're doing this kind of thing, and these Psalms are doing something else that's kind of alike. And when you look through that lens, there's maybe 20, 30 types of Psalms that you might get, but three big ones emerge. The first one is hymns, songs of praise, or variations on that thought, things that you and I might call hymns today. We have hymn books upstairs. Here are the hymns. This is the hymn book for the Jewish people. And so hymns, songs having to do with praise of God. A second category is called entreaties. And I'm picking up a word that comes from the King James Version out of the book of Ruth. It's fairly well known because a lot of people use it in wedding ceremonies. When Ruth spoke to her mother-in-law and said, "Entreat me not to leave you." You remember that? The word entreat means what?
Beg.
request. Don't beg me.
Don't plead
with me. Don't try to convince me. Right. So the idea there is entreat me not meant the opposite. Entreat means to plead or to beg or to pray. So songs of prayer as opposed to songs of praise. But songs of petition, you might say. And when you look at this one, the people who look at this, the commentators and so forth, will divide this category into two groups. Collective and individual. Collective means? The nation as a whole or some region or some city is expressing a collective prayer. And individual would be one particular person. Now, it turns out that after a while, the individual entreaties became used in collective settings. Right? So when David cried at one point, created me a clean heart, O God, and renew within me a right spirit, that was an individual. But you and I have seen that used in worship services in our day, that the very wording of that. So entreaties of those sorts are there. And typically the collectives would have been used in a moment of national peril or national emergency or national catastrophe. Taiwan might have such a thing today because of the earthquake that took place over there. Peru with some of the things that happened a while back. And if Brazil had any sense at all, they might be praying that over the Zika virus that seems to be just spreading and spreading and spreading down there. Something really bad is coming. And, you know, a prayer to say, God, maybe we can be spared from this. That's the sort of thing. The individuals would usually be similarly peril. But what would examples of such peril be? What would people pray about?
Exile.
Yeah, that might be more collective. What about individual? What would be the perils that somebody might... Yeah, David was running from a lot of enemies at a lot of different times, and a lot of different people fell into that category. And he might be praying for freedom from or deliverance from that. What else?
The sin, forgiveness.
Old age shows up. Pain shows up. And the prayer list in the first hour had several items that were pretty much chalked up to old age and pain. And it isn't unusual in those circumstances to hear a loved one say, you know, Mom is in such pain, that if she were to be delivered, I think I'm finally ready to say that's okay. And maybe you've been there too. And Psalms sometimes are expressing that.
Lord, I see family issues.
And any of these, what I'm saying is turn your attention to the prayer list, the larger one as well as the one that's for your hour, and begin to look at those. And there are Psalms that deal directly with a few and indirectly with a lot of those. Okay? And then the third category of the big ones, there's again 10 or 15 more, but the big ones, the third category is Thanksgiving. And most of the commentators separate that out, that when the entreaties are asking God to intervene, asking God for help, the thanksgivings come to say, God, thank you for helping. And those seem to be the big ones. It is important, I don't think I've said this in here yet, it is important to recognize that over time, the individual ones were adapted to collective use. I think I said that, but just in case I didn't. Okay. Now, there's a lot more to do, and I'll do some of that next week. But I want to go for just a moment, just to get you started looking at some things. I want you to begin to look, if you will, at verse 0 in some Psalms. So let's start with Psalm 3. I want you to look at Psalm 3 and look at verse 0. Now, Barbara told me after the first hour was over, she doesn't have verse 0 in her. And it's not going to be listed as verse 0. It'll just be there before verse 1. Do you find verse 0 in that? What does verse 0 do? It tells you this is a psalm. At least mine does. It's attributed to David, which means either David wrote it or it was written in memory of, or in knowledge of, or in relationship to David. Most of the time we think David actually wrote it. And what else does it tell you? Tells you the circumstances under which he wrote it. What were the circumstances? Now, if you don't know 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, if you don't know those things, this may not link to you. But if you do, you got a chance. What was this one? Running from his son Absalom. What had Absalom done that made him run from his own son? Coup. That was designed to end a coup, C-O-U-P, a coup that was designed to end with David's death and Absalom as sole ruler. That was the plan. That David was going to die, and David runs for his life. Barely escapes. Some people, from Absalom's point of view, committed treason to help David get away. And when he manages to get away, and the implication of what I read here, it doesn't say when he got away. What does it say? When he was fleeing. Mine says on the road. He stops at night and he writes a song. One of the strengths of what we see in David was his ability to take a moment where he doesn't have time to think about anything else and think about the most important things in the middle of that. That's really hard to do. And he models that for us. Yes, Paul?
Is this not found in the original text, is it?
Yes. I'm told yes. But it is clearly, according to the translators, it is clearly not the psalm that was written. It is what the editors put in to help you understand. And I'm showing you, I've gone through the first 60 chapters and picked out about 15 or so to look at. There are more to look at, and they keep going through the whole thing. I'm simply trying to alert you to keep an eye out for verse 0. If yours has it, look at it. It might have some interesting things for you. So the first thing I've shown you is it can tell you the circumstances that were going on when the thing was written. And very often those will be individual things of one sort or another.
Mine also.
Sorry?
Mine also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now some of you may have study Bibles where extra words are put in just before verse 0, like in Psalm 3. Mine says, morning prayer of the upright in persecution. That's not in the original text. But the phrase, Psalm of David when he was fleeing from his son Absalom, it is my understanding that was in there, but it was clearly set aside, I don't know how, set apart from the text of the Psalms, of that particular psalm. Turn to 5 and 6 and see what verse 0 gives you. Turn to 5 and 6. What's the purpose this morning? Get you oriented. Get you begin to look at some things. Right? What do you see in 5 and 6? Louder?
For the music leader.
Keep going.
For the flutes.
Yeah, and it tells you the instruments. For this one, go get a flautist. You do know not to say flutist, right? If you want to look educated, you have to say flautist. You know that, right? Gary Larson put this great Far Side cartoon out. I still remember. It showed an elephant sitting at a piano. An elephant sitting at a piano. Tusks and all this stuff. And his front feet are there. How do you play piano with front feet that look like that? And the little bubble up over his head says, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? I'm a flautist, for goodness sake. I thought that was hilarious. Right? This one says, if you want to do this one the way it was meant to be done, get some flutes. How about chapter 6, Psalm 6, what does it say?
On an eight-string lyre.
Mine says on an octachord. Now, if yours has anything there, it should have the number 8 somewhere in there. 8-stringed this, 8-stringed that. Mine says octachord, so it's saying that. Okay. Again, yours may not. Remember, Barbara doesn't have any of this stuff.
Mine just says stringed instruments.
Yours just says stringed instruments. Mine says 4 strings, and then it says for an octachord, for the octachord.
On string, according to the 8th.
According to the 8th.
It stopped, period.
Yeah. And here's the cool thing. We don't know what the instruments were. We get clues from here and there, and this is what people have built. I showed you the picture a little while ago. That's what people have built when they say, well, this may have been what it looked like, and maybe they're seeing something that was carved in a stone frieze of some sort, F-R-E-I-Z-E. And they've seen something. Okay, maybe that was what this was. But in any event, it's beginning to say things like that. How about number 18? Psalm 18. Look again at verse 0. Look again at verse 0. What does it say? This one in my translation is quite long.
Yes.
Is yours quite long?
I do have one here.
Oh, wow. How about that? For the choir master of David. But it goes on to say, mine says, of David, the servant of the Lord, who addressed the words of this song to the Lord when the Lord had delivered him from all of his enemies and, mine says, from the clutches of Saul. He said, does yours have a he said? Right. And then it begins to give the song. Now, if you didn't know that, the psalm might not have the same meaning and significance as if you did know that. We've seen one where he was fleeing from Absalom. We're probably going to see some where he was fleeing from Saul. I think there's at least one where he was hiding in a cave. Do you remember what happened when he was hiding in the cave? This is one of those moments that gets a little crude. Saul came in to... King James says to cover his feet.
Yes.
King James says to cover his feet. Turns out it's not possible to go to the cho unless you end up with most of your body covering your feet. He was going to the bathroom. And inside the cave was David and all his men. And while he was covering his feet, David comes up, cuts off a little bit of the hem of his garment. He goes back out. He ends up on the other side of the ravine, and David shouts, "Oh, my father, oh, Saul, I spared your life. You want proof? Look down at your garment. Here's the piece that's missing." And in the middle of these kinds of things, some songs were written by David. But this one was written when all that was over. When all that was over. Okay. I didn't talk about 34 in the first hour, but I think I will in this hour. Take a look at Psalm 34. I do not think so. They seem to be mostly collected together in sort of groupings. You'll find psalms of thanksgiving sort of grouped together, other things grouped together. And there's hints in here. There's hints in here. And I think you've already seen one of them. There's at least one that says, this one is from the hymn book of such and such. And we think that maybe there were a number of these that were all collected together into this. This is maybe a good place to say it. How many psalms are there?
150.
Okay. I need you to repeat after me. I want you to practice this. Ready? The question is, how many psalms are there? Your answer is, well, Dr. Myers. It depends on the language. If I look in the Hebrew or the Latin or the Syriac, I get all kinds of different numbers. Okay, that's enough for right now for you to get the Syriac, I think, has 155. One of them has 148. Some of those that are in one Bible are split apart in the ones that we have. Several of the ones in the Syriac Bible are combined in ours. Right. So what I'm saying is, don't be arrogant about 150. Your answer should start with, well, in the translation that I normally use, there's 150. And I think that's the safer thing to say, because there's some folks using translations where the numbers are slightly different. Still okay? But I was taking you to Psalm 34. What was the circumstances for this one? Psalm 34. Pretended to be nuts. Do you remember this moment? He was chased by Saul, no hope at all, running out of food, and he ends up going into the city that's the capital of one of the biggest enemies that Israel had, or that Judah had, went into this place with well, at that time it was a combined nation, and one of the biggest enemies. And he acted like he was insane and got away with it. And when he got through, he wrote a psalm. Most of us are probably ashamed of having done that. David was saying, God, I don't think I came up with that on my own. I think you handed me a trick to play in that particular moment. And if it had not been for that, I'd be dead. I am grateful, and I want to express my gratitude at the end of the song. I picture him having a journal in which he's writing poetry as he goes along. A warrior who's also a poet. There have been a few of those over the years, but not too many. They said Patton was one. I don't know if that's true. He certainly read it. He certainly read poetry. Whether he wrote it, I don't know. Okay, is this enough to give you a sense of that? And I'll just simply tell you, if you keep an eye on verse zero, every once in a while, you find rabbits to chase. Really, really interesting things that connect to other parts of David's life. I won't show you where those are. I'll let you see if you can hunt and find a few. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time left in terms of us doing the things that I want to do, but I want to show you a couple of other things. We were right there on Psalm 34, right? Okay, I want to stay with Psalm 34, and I want to ask you, do you have anything in the margin? Do you have anything in the margin on Psalm 34? Psalm 33 won't have it. Psalm 32 won't have it. I don't think Psalm 36 has it. No. Something printed in your translation next to, in my case, each verse of Psalm 34. Okay, now, reference no. Yours has a letter.
What it has is Hebrew, not English. Hebrew alphabet. Aleph,
Bet, Gimel, Wow. This is a psalm in which the first verse begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The second verse begins with the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The third verse begins with the third. In translation in English, you may very well lose that. Translation, you're going to really have to work to get the first verse. And the number of letters in the Hebrew alphabet is not the same as the number of letters in the English alphabet. You've got a problem anyway. But some translations will have, mine has out in the margin, it has Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, He, Zain, Het, Tet, Yod, Kaf, Lamed, Mem, Nun, and it keeps on going. One for every verse all the way through. And what I'm telling you is, keep an eye out. There's about six or eight of these. This one has a letter for each verse. Each verse starts with that letter. There's some where you get a letter for two verses, and then a letter for two more verses. So it would be twice as long as this one. There's one that has eight verses per letter. And that one is quite long, and some of you know which psalm is quite long. We'll know which one that is. I will tell you that there was a time we came to a worship service that was primarily a guest musician. Actually, a musical couple had come to give a worship concert, essentially. We've had some of those here. And the wife was sitting at the piano. The husband was at the podium. I'm almost positive they had practiced this. They tried to make it look like it was just off the cuff, but I think they had practiced it. The husband says, we're now going to sing for you a setting of the 119th Psalm. And all across, not everybody, but all across the auditorium was this... And the wife leans into her microphone over to the piano and says, "Dear, that's the 19th song." And across the whole auditorium goes, Okay. I don't know if any of you were there that night, but I clearly remember that moment. Because people who knew 119th Psalm, we could be here all night. Okay? If you look at that one, it's an alphabetical, just like 34, just like 37, just like several others, there's six or eight or ten of these things, I don't know how many. But it's being done maybe in a way to help people remember. Have you seen children's books that have things like this? It's a way to remember, maybe. But in any event, 119th Psalm turns out to be the longest one because it got so many verses per letter. Okay. What's the shortest psalm? I had too many people the first hour who kept good notes because they instantly gave me the answer to this, but I didn't have a chance to let them pull back my ears quick. The answer is, have you turned to 119?
117.
Turned to 117. 119 is the longest chapter in the entire Bible. 117 is the shortest chapter in the entire Bible. Okay? Now, here's what's significant. What's in between? Those two. asked a while ago, are these in order? I don't know, but I think these two are. Somebody has put the longest psalm and the shortest psalm on either side of Psalm 118. Does anybody see that? Okay. Does anybody know what's significant about Psalm 118? Do you have notes from another day? Because I had a group of people who had notes from another day in the first hour. Do you know? Verse 8. Verse 8 of Psalm 118 is the middle verse, or I would prefer to say the central verse in the Bible. One half of all the verses in the Bible are before this verse. One half of all the verses in the Bible are after this verse. And I think whoever put the psalm together has marked this for you by putting the biggest chapter of the whole Bible and the littlest chapter of the whole Bible on either side of this one, It's verse 8. Verse 8 of Psalm 118. Now, let me say, verses did not exist until the 14th or 15th century. Somebody who I think it was French Catholics, put the verse numbers in, and supposedly they did it while they were riding on horseback from one city to another, so when the horse stumbles, the verses don't make sense. They've got the numbers in the wrong place. But somebody took the time to count with the numbering system that exists. Remember, it didn't exist when all this was originally written. But in the numbering system that exists, verse 8 of chapter 118 is the middle verse, or the central verse of the Bible. What does it say?
Better to take refuge in the Lord than to put your trust in human beings. That's the central message of the Bible in about two different senses.
One is a very literal sense, and one is a spiritual sense. Now, I think we're going to stop at that point so we keep the two groups together. I do want to go back and tell you something. I showed you this a little while ago, right? This little bit of history back here. Right? This long list and this list of... Whoops. There it is. Here's somewhere. This list of 30 or 40 names. I don't remember why I put all these down.
And I don't think I want to recreate something like that. I think I want to do something fresh. Here's my challenge. I want to find 40 people, maybe 50, between the two classes, willing to say, I will take 3 or 4 or at most 5 minutes and talk about a verse or a small group of verses, 3, 4, 5 verses out of the Psalms that mean something to me, big, or that at one point in my life meant something big to me. And I want to see if I can get 50 names, at least 40, and have, here's what I'm going to talk about and have that. And then each week, have somebody just take 3 or 4 names. The problem is, because I've got two classes back, I need to have a number of people from here, not three there. To make it all even, most of you have to do this part. So your challenge is, over the next week or so, see if you can find some part of the song that meant something to you. I want to be end up being unique. So if one of you goes into Psalm 23, you can't all go in there. Okay. But let's see. I'll bring a piece of paper next week. We'll see what we can do about doing this together. That sound okay? And then just take a turn. And maybe we'll make it formal, and maybe we'll make it informal. But
I'd like to just take a minute to say, this meant something to me. And sort of like in the spirit of verse 0, here were the circumstances. And it may be a moment of transcendent joy, and it may be a moment of deep valley, because the Psalms catch both of those and everything in between. Okay? So let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you that poets who have your heart and your spirit inside of them have been inspired to give us these hymns. Words that still mean something today, thousands of years after they were originally written. I thank you that you have preserved your word so that we can use it today. I thank you especially for David and for Solomon and for Lamech, the ones that they tell us were important and significant in the writing of certain of these psalms, for the inspiration that they give us because you inspired them. And I pray that you would give us each week in the study something to take home to think about to help us in our walk with you. We pray all this in your son's name. Amen.